What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. We hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the Forbes and let them know.
Have I loaded too much Mark Shapiro for you in the soundboard? Is it becoming complicated for you now?
You might have crashed the StreamYard.
I have wondered if there's a max of how much I can put in here because it is growing by the day. In fact, I'm starting to look at the oldest ones, and you know what? We might have to retire.
Stephanie Backway, right?
Might have to move on. I might have to dump some of these out there because it's pretty much at this point, it's just Mark Shapiro at this point.
I think
point.
You got to burn this onto a CDR. And then maybe we can auction it somewhere on eBay. I think people would love to have this in their collections.
Yeah, it's a big burden I take because when he does one of these interviews, it's like I've got to cover it for the site. And then I've got to comb through it after the fact. So, I mean, it's a double whammy. I had to listen to this thing twice.
Yeah, I would say at this point, you might be one of the most well-versed Mark Shapiro analysts that exist in the world.
Well, I don't think there's anyone that listened. Like, I have uncovered, like, almost every interview that this guy has done that's available online. So.
You have enough to, like, put together, like, a great audio documentary. Like, a post-profile on Mark Shapiro.
Don't give me any ideas. I could get bored.
Welcome, everybody who might be listening to us on the pre-feed. John just graced us with the ultimate Mark Shapiro supercut from this UBS press conference. UBS Global Media and Communications Conference. Even the title of this conference sounds boring as hell. But nothing is boring coming out of this man, Mark Shapiro. So thank you for that, John.
Humans are social animals. That's just a fact.
We spent a lot of time talking about John Cena's media tour on the XL portion of Rewind to Dynamite, going through his recent interviews. Way listened to his Tom Rinaldi interview. I covered the Chris Van Vliet portion, although you watched both.
I listened to both. Yeah,
it's a good amount of Cena for you going into the weekend. So big discussion on John Cena, as well as NXT from Tuesday night, the World Tag League, which now one team has advanced to the final, and we will get another team qualifying on Friday. Masha Slamovich exiting TNA with her contract up, and the second season of Unreal that will drop January the 20th. All that can be heard on the XL portion of Rewind to Dynamite. If you are a subscriber at postwrestlingcafe.com, we are going to be coming back on Thursday. I will be joined by David Bixenspan. It's a special double shot that's coming at you with a review of Video Killed the Radio Star, covering Bubba the Love Sponge and the Hulk Hogan sex tape controversy and how this exploded in the Tampa radio wars involving Bubba at the center of controversy. So we will go through all of that. What's in the documentary? What is not in the documentary? And, a thorough review of this 2.5 hour documentary that Waiting is never going to be watching. I can promise you that. But I hope he listens to this one.
You know, maybe your review will compel me to do so. You finished it, I trust.
Yes, I did finish this. Yeah. Took me a few sittings to get through, but it's an interesting documentary. I will say that much.
Okay, that could mean anything. I don't know if you liked it or not. Maybe you loved it.
Yeah, that's like saying that's fascinating.
I'm looking forward to hearing you and David Bixenspan talk all about this. Yes.
That's coming up Thursday. Friday night, we will have Rewind to SmackDown. Saturday, we will have Kate from Montreal with Bruce Lord to cover the Winter is Coming Collision portion of their events with the Cardiff Wales show. Wayne and I will be up late Saturday night after Saturday night's main event and John Cena's retirement match. And then Sunday, we will end off the week on the Post Wrestling Cafe with Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord taking you through the finals of the World Tag League and the last tour for New Japan this year, as they'll have three smaller shows and then it's right into the Tokyo Dome on January 4th.
Always, always, always busy here at the Post Wrestling Cafe. And as always, later on this month, we're even going to have an MCU later Captain America review from 1990. We have, just over the course of the past week, released our TNA Final Resolution review, our final battle discussion with Kate from Montreal and Collision Course, and our UFC 322 review as well. So look for all of that and everything else in the archive at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Yeah, and shout out to our crack video staff, a tremendous recap of Survivor Series 1991 in short form content. I mean, they have done the impossible. Like, I now like enjoy watching myself. I just sit back, get some popcorn. I'm like, man, I'm really good. Yeah, these videos are tremendous.
This got you to sign up to TikTok.
Oh, yeah, right, John? Yeah. I was like, man, I'm going to be a phenom on this new TikTok.
Yeah, join show up on our Instagrams, TikTok at Post Wrestling Official for the great work of Sean and Luke, our shorts editors.
The best in the game. All right, we have Winter is Coming from the Gateway Center Arena. That sounds like one word too many. It could be a center, it could be an arena. You can't be both.
Gateway Center Arena. This entails that Gateway Center is its own entity, and somehow it's been able to purchase an arena, like a center's been able to purchase another building.
You think it's short form that they're like, hey, we're going to the GCA tonight?
Maybe some people will.
The vowel helps at the end for that.
I would call it
2,879 was the last number from WrestleTix. I believe it was like 12,500. That's what it sounded like tonight. This crowd was amazing.
This was an incredible crowd.
This was an awesome, awesome crowd in Atlanta. I mean, this number is nothing spectacular, but my God, did this sound amazing.
If every crowd sounds like this, then I would suggest TKO put WrestleMania in this building, okay? Because this
forget yield,
incredible.
Okay?
Yeah.
You get some decibels here. So we're starting off with the Timeless Love Bombs and Babes of Wrath to determine the first women's tag team champions. And we got an old-fashioned motorboating by Harley Cameron on Mina, and then Storm sniffing Willow when they are tagged in. Storm and Mina get sent to the floor, big cannonball from Willow, and then a pounce sends Tony out of the ring as they go to picture-in-picture with the heat on Mina. And Storm gets the big tag. This crowd was very hot for this match, and when Tony came in, it's like they erupted. She's hitting Mongolian chops, tries for the chicken wing, and then Mina's in, applies a figure four onto Cameron. It's reversed. Storm resets them, then Willow turns them over, and then they start fighting, and we see Willow apply a prison lock onto Tony Storm. There's a sling blade off the top into a Storm Zero. Willow makes the save, and at the end, with Mina in with Harley, she goes for the glamorous driver, and it's countered with Harley's finishing move into a Babe with the power bomb, and it's Willow pinning Mina Shirakawa as they become the tag champions in 13 minutes and 53 seconds. And I was glad that they spent some time after. They got Renee in the ring. Willow said how this was a rough year, not knowing who to trust. She's so proud of Harley. And Harley explained she met Willow in her second ever match, which was 3 years ago on an episode of AEW Dark. And Storm and Mina returned to the ring, and they embraced the new champions and shook their hands.
I thought it was a great match with really strong energy throughout. And I think, you know, I really like the finish. You automatically give the Babes of Wrath some credibility by beating the favorites in this tournament with the biggest star in the division in Toni Storm. They're a team with a lot of personality that you can write TV around. And, you know, they have a lot of heel teams that'll go after them and, I think, create compelling stories. So, but what stood out to me in the match is the continued, like, star reaction for Willow. You know, we know she's always been well-received by this audience, but in this match, she had a face-off with Toni Storm. And this crowd was cheering them both 50-50. Yeah. So to me, it's just this plus like some of her prior appearances recently, it's just more proof to me that this audience is really ready for them to see Willow push to a level of a Toni Storm. I would say she certainly feels like she's next in line for a world title type of level thing. She might even be a hot enough act that you could justify crowning her at a big event, like an all-in, if they want to wait that long. But, man, she's been doing really great. Harley Cameron, you know, this acts as some form of, like, I think culmination of, you know, her persistence and improvement over the years. Certainly, like, she's achieved way more than I think anybody would have expected in the deep waters of AEW that really kind of emphasizes great in-ring performance. She is a great character. We know that. She's very entertaining. We know that. But she's also been able to keep up to this very high standard in ring. And I think that's a huge testament to her.
Yeah. I mean, like, let's hope that these tag belts don't get lost in the shuffle. Like, we're talking about Willow as like a single star. Like, hopefully they can just put the focus. Like, it was what, the beginning of October they announced this tournament. Like, they have played this out for a long time, and, you know, I think they did a good job tonight of making this feel like a big finale to the tournament. The crowd loved this match, and it came off like a significant deal crowning these champions. I thought they had a very good match to start things off. The ops are in the back, and Joe says, "Eddie, you have asked and you will receive tonight. This is the real Joe. Ruthless by design, and I don't care about men like you. And you're going to find out that I will show you the reality of what this industry truly is."
Joe sounds great. And with this faction of just miserable people behind him, somehow, like, everybody looks a bit cooler with Joe talking.
I don't know if Hook's miserable. He looks like he's exhausted. Like, he looks like he just needs like a rest.
They
like
all look really jet lagged, wouldn't you say? Like, look at Shibata.
Got that bandage. Amazingly, no wounds that came out of his tag match later tonight. Then we go to the stairwell with the Death Riders, and it's Moxley with his monologue. His back is against the wall in the C2, but he dares those to count him out. And he's going on here, and Garcia at one point, like, just Jimmy Fallon's it up here. He's like smiling, and then just buries his head, and couldn't tell if, like, am I supposed to be focused on Garcia, who's like, look at this idiot talking here, or was this guy just like laughing at this promo and putting his head down? Because I guess it is all in the eye of the beholder what I was supposed to take from this.
I guess I didn't notice. I wasn't paying attention.
Go back and watch, because he's like, it's John Moxley saying a comedic line. He's like, well, if you people out there, I think you suck. And Garcia just like full on like is laughing, and he just puts his head down and buries it. And then he raises it and he cuts the serious promo. But again, he cuts off Moxley and continues the promo. So I could have read this as just a standard Death Riders promo, or it is, again, the jockeying for leadership that Moxley's being undermined. I don't know what I was to take from this.
So, I mean, this was certainly to me a promo that I didn't really read that much tension into. Like,
I watched it twice to make sure I got this right.
I don't doubt that it could be there subtly, but like, so much of, I think, this like John Moxley potential sort of ousting of the Death Riders has been very subtle, you know, until the point where, like, if it all comes out by the end that, like, hey, it's just the audience that's really kind of putting this out there, maybe I can kind of buy it, because they have not been sort of like so blatant with it in every iteration of, or every instance of these Death Riders promos. Like, in this one, I just felt like it was,
you can argue it makes a whole lot more sense for the whole group to turn, because then you have, like, you can feud with the ops, you can feud with the Don Callis family, but just Moxley turning alone is
right.
Like, I do feel like Moxley is clearly turning. And yes, like, that is very evident. It's just the question if the group follows him or not. It's like, they do not need three heel groups all going at once.
Agreed. And I think there's maybe a lot of potential in something like the Death Riders being a babyface group all of a sudden. I mean, try to explain that, I suppose, given like what they've done.
I mean, their mission statement is very much a babyface one. It's like they are fighting for the company that it's just in their image that they want it. Like, they are pretty much like, they are the staunch defenders of AEW.
And this particular promo I found to be very, like, I mean, it's John Moxley, like, positioning himself as the underdog in this Continental Classic that refuses to give up. His back's against the wall, but if you give him a chance, he could still do it. I mean, that's a babyface message. And so, but most interestingly, it it, like, Garcia was kind of on the same page as him, and they were all really like supportive of this babyface message. So it did make me wonder if the whole group might be turning. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high-quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelly Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelly creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forests. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Jack Perry gets his first match in the Continental Classic, taking over for Darby Allin. So he's got 0 points against Kazuchika Okada, who has 3 in the Gold League. And Rene Olivi is ringside to preview the match. And notes that Jack Perry has not won a singles match in over a year. And
well, hold on a second. He hasn't had a singles match in a year, has he?
So his last AEW match was singles match was in November of last year. Oh. However, he had the Yoda Tsuji match at Wrestle Dynasty in January.
That doesn't count.
It obviously doesn't, because they said it over and over in this on commentary singles match in over a year.
Did he win that one?
No, he lost to Tsuji.
Okay, so Renee is right.
I mean, why does it not count?
No. Wait, what did Renee say? He hasn't had a singles win in a year?
He hasn't had a singles match.
Oh, okay. So they're both wrong. Oh, it was Brian said he hasn't had a singles match.
They all said it. Like Excalibur said it, Danielson said it, Renee said it. They all went with this story that he hasn't had a singles match in over a year.
New Japan only matters when it's supposed to.
I mean, this could be the fracturing of the relationship right there. Jack Perry comes out aggressive, and Okada slips out of the corner, drop kicking Perry to the floor, and Perry grabs his ankle. So Okada takes over, and then Perry goes to kick off of the turnbuckle and flip over. Spider-Man, this dude is not, okay? He went over, and this he had the smoothness of, like, me trying this, and hits a released German, then a DDT. Okada does the middle finger pose, and Perry ducks a Rainmaker, and Okada follows with a drop kick and ends up eating a poison Rana after ducking another Rainmaker. There's the knee strike by Perry, goes for the snare trap, but Okada bites his hand to get free. And the announcers are like, well, it's a smart way to get out of this hold. It's like, I don't know if this is by the spirit of the rule set here of the Continental Classic, but Okada lifts him up for
rules. What rules say? You're not allowed to bite in the Continental Classic?
I don't think you can't bite, period. Like that's not a legal maneuver.
In professional wrestling? In a pro wrestling match?
No, this is
Have you ever seen a DQ as a result of biting?
Who's ever bitten someone to necessitate a DQ?
Biting happens all the time in wrestling, does it not?
He bit free here. There was more biting to come because Okada lifted him for a tombstone, and Jack Perry bit him in the dick.
Yep.
creative escape. And so Okada recovers, gets caught after getting caught in the snare trap, gets to the rope, comes back, short arm Rainmaker, holds on, and Perry ducks one more, runs into an Emerald Flosion and a final Rainmaker. So Okada wins at 12 minutes and 58 seconds. But will we get Renee with an update on his next match on the status of his dick?
I wonder.
If she does a full-on like sports report on his injury going into his next match.
Yeah. I know a great Dr. Okada. I know some great nurses that I think would have some great questions if you ever head into a need a surgery.
Let me ask you a controversial question, Mr. Okada.
I thought this was a hell of a match, and I thought a great introduction to the tournament for Darby. For Jack Perry. I mean, it sucks to have Darby out of the tournament, but like, I don't think anybody would have been left disappointed after seeing Perry in this particular match. To me, like, it continues to show that Perry is just so much more compelling wrestling as an underdog babyface than he was as a heel. Just like the size really kind of works to his advantage. His style works to his advantage. And it's not to say the heel run wasn't worthwhile, because he's, again, has been able to take some of the edge that he developed as the scapegoat and some of the sort of like maturity of the scapegoat character. And he's been able to roll it into this babyface, more serious version of himself that is completely like separate from Jungle Boy. So I think he's continues to really impress me on this particular run as a babyface. It took Okada to a higher pace of match. It brought out, I think, some of the best of Okada we've seen currently in this tournament so far. So I was a little bit confused why like he was selling the knee so much when Okada didn't really go for it at all. But beyond that, I thought another tremendous match in the C2.
Well, I think it was like from getting drop kicked off the turnbuckle, which might have even been in the picture in picture. But
he sold it even like on the tope that he did at the beginning. So like it was pretty consistent throughout the early portion of the match. But I don't know, didn't really result in much.
Yeah, I mean, this tournament is really going to give us an indicator of like Jack Perry and where his kind of stature is going to be, at least in some kind of like singles run. Like I thought the match was good. I didn't think it was blow away great, but they had the benefit of
Biting that took it down for you.
Well, I will say this crowd, they really elevated Perry. Like you had the benefit of this audience like really elevating and getting behind him, which I didn't know if that would necessarily be the reaction here, but it did work for the crowd. Don Callis' family comes out and they've got the Young Bucks money, and basically Callis offers Perry a spot in the match, and Perry is contemplating it. He counts the members that are outnumbering him and says, for the second time tonight, I'm going to bite off more than I can chew.
That's pretty good, yes.
And he attacks them all. Luchasaurus runs down. I don't know what the deal was here, but Luchasaurus runs down and it was like the world stood still because he had to wait for, it was probably like 6-7 seconds, but it felt so much longer until the Young Bucks showed up with chairs. And then like the Don Callis family members, that they spot them running in and then they have to turn their backs to like be hit from behind. This was not the most well-timed run in, but the Bucks ran wild with chair shots. They hit a BTE trigger to Okada, and then Callis is surrounded by Perry, Luchasaurus, and the Bucks, hands over the duffel bag of cash, and then Takeshita runs in and eats a super kick, protecting Don Callis. And the Jungle, the Jurassic Express, and Young Bucks are left alone.
Yeah, but they obtain the money, the bags of money.
Yes, but somehow they're going to put this money on the line, even though they got possession of this money.
I guess they don't legally own the money.
Don't they?
Well, okay, so Callis later explains that I can put my sick my lawyers on you and I can tie you up in legal drama.
What's the legal grounds that Callis has?
Well, maybe the money's still in his name. He has to like, you know, transfer.
Did the Bucks agree to that match that if we win, the money is put in escrow?
They must have. We don't know the you know what's in this contract. You know, Callis would have to make a transfer in kind. You know,
I would love to see the contract. If ever there was a match that did need a contract signing before, and when do we ever revisit the contract after a match?
You know what? This is a question for David Otunga's YouTube channel to.
I'm worried because us talking about this, we might get a promo on TV next week to just yell at people who are complaining about this, all of this logic. But hey, we want to get a trios match with Kenny Omega, okay? And this is how we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. There's a video package from Mercedes Moné, who feels like she's going the timeless Toni Storm route of like losing her mind. It's like one of the lines from Excalibur, where will Mercedes go now? It's like she's down to 12 belts after losing to Statland. Well, she lost going for the AEW women's title and then dropped the TV title to Red Velvet on Friday. So she is down to a mere 12 belts, Moné.
Maybe soon to be 11. We'll see.
Renee interviewed Eddie Kingston, who was repping our guy Dimmix, and he said he's nervous, but it's good to have fear. And then he notes that today is the 50th anniversary of Terry Funk winning the NWA World Heavyweight Championship in 1975 from Jack Briscoe. I was like, what a cool pull that he had to reference this. And he gets emotional, hoping that his parents are watching tonight, and admits, I'm 0-2. In title matches. It's like, 0-2. Dude, you've got like 7-8 more of these before you can get ready for going for that belt. You're just getting warmed up.
Yeah, I'd be like, Eddie Kingston, have you heard of this wrestler named Javon Evans?
How has Javon Evans had 11 title matches? And this guy in his entirety in AEW has had 2.
Wow. Listen.
This is crazy. Was Javon Evans even like of legal age when Eddie Kingston started in AEW?
Yeah, he might not have been even born yet.
Yeah, I mean, 2020, we're going back 5 years. So he says that he promises Joe that you're going to have the fight of your life because I'm not going down easy. This is just a great promo Eddie Kingston here, just getting you into the belief. Like, could this guy pull it off? I just thought this was a great interview segment.
I think we know the Eddie Kingston formula by now, right? Okay, like, come out like you're just like, you know, maybe you address the cameraman, break the fourth wall and show vulnerability. I'm not sure of myself.
Maybe he comes out, maybe this. He pauses, he does a rosary or two.
Yeah,
take it all in.
Reference a legend from the past, okay? Somebody from Japan, or in this case, Terry Funk, and just talk about how you're going to beat somebody's ass. And wear a 90s rap musician shirt.
Have you seen the RJ City producing Eddie Kingston's entrance?
I saw it briefly, yes.
Okay.
A bit of it, yeah.
We go on. Shivani brings out Mark Briscoe.
Well, what do you want to say about it?
I thought it was really funny. I thought it was great. I just didn't know if you had seen it or not. But this was RJ City producing Eddie Kingston as if he were Paul Levesque. And it was like really well done. Like parody at a level that wrestling does not often come anywhere close to. So Shivani brings out Mark Briscoe and he tells the doubters to kiss my big white ass. And Wheeler Yuta and the Death Riders interrupt. They insult Mark Briscoe. Garcia feels bad for Briscoe because everything about you is sad and you're going to have to provide your family with a broken leg after Saturday. And Briscoe warns him he's got an ass whipping coming and then strikes Garcia, and we get a pull apart as our lead up to Cardiff on Saturday with the title defense by Mark Briscoe.
Yeah, very quick, simple build to this one. Don't expect the title change, but I do expect a great match.
Triangle of Madness are attacking more extras backstage. Chris Statlander comes in, gets knocked down, but then grabs a chair to send them away. No Jamie Hayter here, but they are going to be having the tag match on Saturday. This felt as much like, I felt like this Cardiff show is like the pay-per-view that they were building up throughout
the
show.
The Saturday show? Well, they're putting a lot into it.
They are putting a ton into this show on Saturday.
Definitely feels like a heightened edition of Collision. And they're going to need this extra promotion because it's bouncing all over the place in the time zones.
Yeah, I don't think the show is going to do well on Saturday at all, but it won't be for lack of trying on tonight's show.
At the very least, like they, I hope enough people like get the word out to set their DVRs at a different time because it's 4:30 p.m. Eastern, by the way, everyone.
Powerhouse Hobbs and Katsuyori Shibata against Hangman Page and Swerve Strickland in a New Jack tribute match. So it's a tornado tag, which we would learn does not mean no DQ. It just means no tags are necessary. So the ops come out with their dojo students, and Paige and Swerve enter through the crowd with chains, and Swerve's got a staple gun. So the students are lambs led to slaughter in the crowd, and then Shibata and Hobbs brawl with them into the concourse area, and we have a concession stand brawl. Paige downs a beer after putting Hobbs through a table. Eventually, they make their way to the ring, and that's when it's explained when the referee takes a chair away from Hangman that this is not no DQ, despite all we have seen. That happened before the bell rang. You get in all of this before the bell rings. So they're double teaming on Paige. Nana gets involved and Swerve returns. And Shibata ducks a buckshot lariat, low blows Paige, and goes for an armbar that's broken by the Swerve stomp. And then we have Hangman and Swerve just gelling as teammates here. We see double rolling elbows, a fallaway slam by Paige into a 450 by Swerve onto Shibata, and they just stare at one another like they are the dream team together. And Hobbs gets sent off the apron through a table by the two. Buckshot is hit to Shibata, followed by the house call, and this looked like the Road Warriors reincarnated here. Josh Alexander's watching in the back because coming up this Saturday on Collision, for free, it's Swerve and Josh Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Man, that little pause in the middle of this match where like Paige and Swerve were looking at each other, like it was like as if they were looking into each other, realizing they were really each other's soulmates. So we've, you know, in this like sort of like rom-com, we've reached this point of the story and it's wonderful. It is AEW's greatest love story. Like we saw with Ospreay and Swerve, like we've seen with Paige and Kenny, like we've seen with Ospreay and Kenny, and now with Paige and Swerve, you take amazing wrestlers and you choose to pair them together, and the result is an amazing tag team. Like right off the bat, they have incredible in-ring chemistry together as a team. They put a lot of strong effort into the coordination and timing of their double team moves. And that made this combination just immediately very exciting to watch. So I love the way they started this with like that sort of in arena brawl. It felt very much like a spiritual continuation of the Hobbs and Page match that we got on the Blood and Guts match. It grabbed this crowd from the beginning, and like for this already hot crowd, I think this was the exact sort of like break in sort of like in arena action that they needed to just liven them up even that much more.
Yeah, I thought this was great. It was an entertaining match for the time they had. I will say the scariest thing in this match, they had when they were still fighting in the crowd, Shibata is seated on a chair on the concrete, and Swerve just runs at him and drop kicks him. And it's just Shibata like going down on the concrete. I will still never watch this guy and not like cringe with anything near the head with this guy. Like it sometimes you totally forget that this guy was, you know, in the state that he was in, but it was a great showcase of Hangman and Swerve. And we'll get into more of this when Hangman does his promo backstage.
Like for me, just on that point, like, you know, Shibata's the type to never say no, likely never say no to things, right? Like he's probably, you know, is just an incredibly proud person that feels like he's capable of anything. And maybe he is. Look what he's done so far already in this second career. But yeah, of course you get concerned for sure.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have two editions of Rewind Away set for you, including a patron's pick where you have voted for us to review the Survivor Series from 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge. Then it's over to 2002 and a review of the very first WWE draft involving Raw and SmackDown as they kick off the brand extension. David Bixenspan is going to join me as we review Video Killed the Radio Star, a documentary on Bubba the Love Sponge, and the sex tape involving Hulk Hogan. Plus, we will have reviews of TNA Final Resolution, New Japan's World Tag League Final, Collision Course every single week, and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. Callis issues his challenge to the Bucks to find a partner for Manchester next week. The winning team gets the $1 million. Big Stoke is by himself, no FTR, and he says how the world's most dangerous narcotic is not on the street, but it's this camera. It's addictive. Everyone wants to get in front of it, and they think that they are great and that they deserve TV time. And there's an addiction to thinking they can win. But Austin Gunn and Juice Robinson, you'll get that chance at that addiction next week in Manchester, and we're going to cure you of it. And you won't have to check the titles at the airport when you leave. Instead, you're going to have to check yourself to the back of the line. Just a fantastic promo here from Stokely.
Excellent. Excellent promo from Stokely. I'm really still not convinced that like his talents are best served as part of FTR, like a group with already like two very capable talkers. But it's getting him like good airtime and like, you know, a pretty high profile feud in the tag division, at least.
Gold League match, Speedball Mike Bailey and Kyle Fletcher. So Bailey, 0 points, Fletcher with six. And there are loud chants as Fletcher is stalling on the floor. Again, I can't say enough about this crowd. They were great. Man, the early portion of this match, we see a corkscrew acai moonsault by Bailey. Fletcher then is placed on the barricade, and Bailey's going for the moonsault into the double knees. But Fletcher stops him, lifts up Bailey, and drops him onto this barricade. And then afterwards, they show his back, which looks like it's just been like whipped by like a switch. It just looked brutal on this back. This guy's gonna have a fun flight back home.
Yeah, I would.
Or to Cardiff on Saturday. He's got to go to either Cardiff or Manchester. He's gonna have some back pain.
Well, but I hope he has enough points to upgrade himself to first class.
Fletcher catches him on the shoulders, off the steps, hoists him up in the air, and Bailey comes down with a poison Rana, then hits the moonsault, double knees. Crowd is going nuts for this. Hits a Frankensteiner, goes for Ultima Weapon. Fletcher gets the feet up, lawn darts him, last ride powerbomb, and that's our first crazy near fall of the match, and they would escalate. They're trading strikes all over the place. There's multiple counters, a snap Rana by Bailey, and then he hits Time Adventure for a two count, then goes for the tornado kick, but is cut off with a super kick. And eventually, after several kicks are exchanged, hits the tornado kick and Ultima Weapon, but Kyle kicks out and the crowd gets on their feet applauding this. He misses an Ultima Weapon to the floor, which just looked like it sucked, and gets hit with an apron bomb, running kick, brain buster. I was literally typing out like the end of the match came here, and totally bit on this near fall, as did I think everyone in this arena. It was amazing. And then with that, the announcement is made 1 minute remaining, right as Bailey gets a sunset flip with the arm capture, and he catches Kyle Fletcher in the match of the tournament. And quite frankly, I seriously looked at this as like, this is probably one of the better matches this year.
Yep.
This was unbelievably great.
Yeah, I think we're so used to like this sort of high standard on Dynamite that,
holy Christ,
like, you know, it's this could very well be one of the greatest TV matches of this year, and that would probably mean one of the greatest TV matches maybe even ever.
It will be so sad if in like 2 weeks, like, we're not even like remembering this match. Like, that is the pace that we live in at this current rate. And you're right, Way. Like, seeing a match like this would have been a high end AEW pay-per-view caliber match. I mean, this was just out of this world great.
Yeah. But yeah, okay. In 2 weeks, maybe when we talk about maybe the best of the tournament, we might still talk about it. But in 2 months, no, I don't think we'll remember this, sadly. Like, there's just so much of this standard right now that it's crazy. But this agree with you.
It was so good. You got I thought they were going the draw. And the little thing that made it was, it might have been Danielson or Excalibur, but one of them early on, like in the first 5 minutes, said they gave out Fletcher's point total from last year. And this year, I think he did 12 last year. This year, he wants to run the table and go perfect. And it was like, just that alone, it's like a draw is like it shatters Fletcher's goal this year. And it gave you something to root for Bailey for. And then he pulls out the win, which was even more unexpected. This was so great. This was just such an amazing match.
Yeah, and you add this amazing crowd on top of it. I have no doubt this match would have done tremendously well everywhere, man. but in front of this crowd that just kind of really took it to an even higher level. Like this was truly perfection. I mean, for me, it also topped Mox versus Takeshita as my match of the tournament. I think so much of that is because, you know, our expectations going in is Fletcher beats Speedball. Fletcher is a guy that is one of the favorites of this entire tournament. Speedball is a guy who's kind of in this tournament to take pins, so we think. So when things like it meant all of these near falls worked tremendously well. Bailey's striking looked so good. The flips were spectacular. And that welt on the back really added a level of drama to this entire thing that felt real and got this crowd and got all of us, you know, that much more invested. So I definitely hope this remains one of the highlights of the tournament in 3 weeks when we talk about it or maybe forget about it.
Like this one is certainly on pace to be the best of the Continental Classics they've done when we're early into it and the quality we have already seen. You know, this has been a spectacular tournament so far.
This would be one of the highlights of the G1 if it took place in
easily
a tournament like that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that brainbuster kickout was just that was outstanding stuff. Renee is with Hangman, and he says he's coming for the AEW title next at World's End, regardless of who wins tonight. And of course, he did have the comment when Swerve accepted to team with him that after we team, we're going to talk. So I could certainly see something where both of them want to go after Joe, whether we get a three-way, something like that with Swerve and Hangman for World's End. But at least we have like a glimmer of where they're going for the pay-per-view, because that's 2.5 weeks away that they will need to get this title match set up. The Young Bucks accept the challenge for the money. They need a partner. They ask Luchasaurus, who turns them down and points to Kenny Omega's locker room. And Kenny knocks on, he answers the door. He doesn't need to do this for money. He'll do it for free. And told us to be there or be square.
Yes. Maybe I'm expecting a more fleshed out story for BT this week, which is come back in proper
where
form.
We will take our brief TV segments and then expand upon them in longer form. This could have used a bit more.
I feel like they might, like they're probably putting most of their effort in BTE than maybe just even segments like this. This just feels like, you know, it's something they have to do. BTE is where they actually feel like they're having fun shooting these sort of backstage segments.
So Collision on Saturday, we have Swerve and Josh Alexander, Jamie Hayter and Chris Statlander against the Sisters of Sin, Mark Briscoe against Daniel Garcia for the TNT title, and the addition of a Blue League match between Claudio Castagnoli and Konosuke Takeshita, which is an interesting match as you have the CMLL heavyweight champion against the IWGP champion on Saturday. Now, part of me thinks, like, I don't think CMLL is losing sleep over their champion losing. New Japan, I could see that being a more interesting one. There's certainly the potential for the draw here, but I wouldn't rule it out either that they could just have Claudio lose this one.
I see a draw, honestly. Yeah. Like I think perception wise, it means a lot, you know, to have one champion beat another promotion's champion. It's one thing for a CMLL guy to beat Claudio, okay? Like you can profit off of that, it's fine. But for the New Japan champion to beat Claudio, I feel like there's a bigger perception issue there.
We'll see. I mean, you certainly have the out that you could do the draw, and I don't think anyone's going to be upset if you get 20 minutes of these guys in Cardiff, which hopefully is like a really solid crowd that they have on Collision. Joe in Kingston closes the show. Hook gets sent to the back, and a lot of like just strike-based offense. Joe hits the face wash and a power slam, and then he's going into Kawada kicks, and Kingston returns with an exploder, and we get a spot from Joe where he hoists him up on the shoulders for a attitude adjustment into the STF and then salutes John Cena into the camera as, you know, UPW fans were just losing their minds here.
Oh, yes, I'll bet, yeah.
Galaxy, man.
So I don't think these two, they never wrestled in WWE.
Not in WWE, but I mean, they both like pretty much back. Started in like with Rick Bassman in UPW. So that's like
with
Daniels their history
and everybody. Like it's a shame we never got a match in the modern, like in their sort of like more mature main event or something.
I mean, the only time they would have overlapped was that like 2017 period that Joe was on the main roster. Like, it's for all like their history and stuff, they were really not in the same place all that often throughout their careers. So Kingston bites the thumb, which is now the new way to break out of submissions in AEW. And he hits the DDT, and they quickly note that's how he beat Shibata, but Joe rolls to the floor.
No reaction, really, though. For the
I know,
DDT.
I know.
And it's not an over.
I was in the minority. I liked the way he won just out of nowhere with Shibata, but you're right. Like, it needs to be something that you're conditioned to care about. But yeah, there wasn't a big tease of anything. So Joe returns to the ring, walks into a cutter, and Eddie sets up for the Hurricane. It's ducked. And he's caught in the coquina clutch, and he goes down. And is this a prelude to Gunther and Cena on Saturday? But Eddie Kingston just withers away, and he is forced to tap at the end. And he is so disappointed at the end as Joe holds up the belt and ends Winter Is Coming.
Incredible match. Well, incredible atmosphere, I should say. Like, the match, I was actually hoping to maybe get to another gear. I don't know if there were time constraints or what, but like, this felt like the type of audience that, you know, and myself included, that wanted to see maybe a more epic battle with a bigger Kingston comeback. This felt like this was like sort of a great however long, like what, 12 minutes, something like that. How long was this?
About that. I'll get the exact
yeah time. Yeah, anyway, was, like but well, like
13.
You know, I was hoping for maybe like a bigger Kingston kick out, or at least like battle from behind, because I felt like the audience interest in him was high enough that I think that sort of deserved it. But at the same time, I mean, you have to understand the booking here. You're trying to, you know, promote Samoa Joe as this like incredibly dominant threat. And I think a win like this is actually very important for him, because it adds even more credibility to him as a champion. So
good. I thought for all things considered, I thought that this achieved what it needed to. I thought, like, I kind of felt for Eddie Kingston in this, that, you know, this is the most ambitious match he's had to have since the comeback. Like we don't know like where he is in comparison to before the injury. Like, you had to go 13 minutes here. It's a big title match. And oh, by the way, you're just gonna follow this like mind-blowing match that they just had it like 20 minutes beforehand as well. But you know what? The crowd, they stayed up for this. They were behind Kingston. Quite frankly, like, his promos really built this up in instead of, like, there was not a person that thought you were getting a title change here, but they did a really great job with Eddie's build up here that you got invested in the match. And this was like a quality win for Joe's title run. And they made something out of this. Like, this was certainly more than worthy of a television main event spot.
Well, I certainly feel like this, like, what, 2-week program really showed that, like, Eddie Kingston is still incredibly beloved by the audience. And I think he's still capable of performances that live up to that sort of storytelling. Like, I would say, like, this build in this match deserved more than the 13 minutes that it got. It deserved a pay-per-view stage. So it really tells me that I think Eddie is still a very, like, viable choice for, at the very least, a title pay-per-view level title contender, if not champion still, which is, I think, something that everybody still wants to see.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not as set on that at this tenure for Eddie Kingston. There was definitely a time that there was, like, for Eddie Kingston to be put right at the top. I don't know if now is that time, but
Well, what's the hesitation for you on that?
The hesitation is, like, I don't, like, a pay-per-view main event, I think, like, that's, you're pretty much talking, like, you've got to go, like, 20, 25 minutes, and I just don't know what that will look like at this point. Like, you know, he's coming off, like, a catastrophic injury, and I have not seen him, like, show me that, like, this is a guy that is, like, the person you put at the top. As much as I could argue this guy is probably the best promo in this company, and that compensates for a lot, it's such a high standard of being in that top position, especially on a pay-per-view.
So he did 13 here that I thought was pretty strong. Like, didn't really show to me any signs of, like, you know, gassing out or anything like that. But yeah, like, 20-25 would be a different story. But I think what he has that a lot of other guys don't have is this crowd that loves him. And we know
he definitely has that
accounts for a lot. You know, like, he still has to work his ass off, of course, but, like, even if he doesn't, like, he's already, like, won half the battle being who he is and having this attention of the crowd, right?
The last thing here is that next week, besides the trios match for the $1 million, they did name that it'll be Okada, Takeshita, and Hechicero taking on Omega and the Young Bucks. So that should be something in Manchester. FTR against Juice and Austin Gunn. And if you have not been watching Collision, I think Juice and Austin Gunn have been doing some excellent promos building this one up for next week. Like, I think they've done a really great job. Similar to this Eddie Kingston match, where on paper, this maybe would not jump out at you. They've done a really good job building this one up, and I'm glad they've held off on it for as long as they have. And then you'll also get the Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal next week, with the two finalists then meeting at the Hammerstein the next week.
Yeah, so I think we have to expect MJF to be back.
I mean, right? if he's coming back in time for World's End, like, this is the time to bring him back.
Has to come back to defend the ring. It would feel really strange if he did not show up. So again, just to remind people, the Battle Royal winners will go on to have a match to compete for the ring, correct?
Yes, and then the winner of that match gets the title match January 14th.
They get the ring and the title match.
Correct.
Essentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it means MJF would have to show up next week if he wants to compete for the ring.
Yes, that's my understanding. I think there's been years past where the winner of the Battle Royal would then face MJF, but this year they've made it that the final two face off in the match. So there you go. The always complex Battle Royals in AEW.
At this point, like, we're more than halfway past the Continental Classic. Pretty much, well, not for everybody. It's kind of staggered who, like, between everybody. Some people have had three matches, some people have only had two, but is it even worth going through the standings? Does it matter?
I mean, there's a lot of parity at this point. I mean, Roderick Strong and Jack Perry are the only ones who have zero, and then you've got threes and sixes. So, I mean, there's really no, like, kind of, you know.
Yeah.
But we're getting close, like, where Strong and Perry, if they don't get on the board, they'll pretty much be out. They were teasing because Kevin Knight came down after the Bayley win. They're starting to hype up that the two teammates will have to face off each other. And that's probably going to be, man, that's going to be another killer match. But I could probably say that for a dozen matches here that are all going to be something else. And then you get the three matches at the pay-per-view.
So the only person to not have taken a pin thus far, or at least not have lost, is Konosuke Takeshita, the IWGP champion. He has had two matches so far, of which he's won both of them. Everybody else has lost at least once, and that includes Claudio to Mascara Dorada. That includes Okada. So everybody has at least lost one match.
All right. That will end our review of Winter is Coming. Awesome show. Awesome.
Great show.
2 hours of shows. Like, really, this was, you know, right up there with, to me, the Blood and Guts episode last month. Like, a really, really solid 2 hours. Did you say at the end, you know what? I wish there was three more hours to follow this.
No, but I did wish the main event went longer.
Well, there you go. Okay. So, maybe this five match, they did the Paul Levesque style tonight, you know, five matches.
This was not a show that dragged at all. No.
No. There was really no filler on this show. Mm-hmm. It was a very, very strong episode of Dynamite. And for nothing else, like, we should get some really strong matches on these shows overseas, but hopefully, like, the crowds are really energetic too, with Cardiff and Manchester, and then you got the Hammerstein ballroom shows as well, which could generate a very similar reaction to tonight, where you'll have your 2,000-2,500 number for New York.
Did you hear what Timothy, like, the whole Timothy Chalamet Cody Rhodes discussion about the Hammerstein ballroom?
No, I didn't.
So I haven't heard the whole interview. I've only seen, like, you know, what the headlines were. And apparently Timothy Chalamet's favorite wrestling show is ECW One Night Stand. And so he really, I didn't even know he was a wrestling fan.
I was going to say, like, how old is Timothy Chalamet? Okay. Anyway, go on.
Well, he at one point, you know, talked about, like, really wanting to see WWE run Hammerstein.
He was 9 years old when that show happened.
I could see a guy like that.
Okay.
Watching ECW One Night Stand at that point, or I could see him, like, you know, being older and going back to the archives. Anyway, and then, like, again, I'm only getting this through, like, the articles that have been aggregated so far and some of the quotes, but, like, you know, he said he talked to Triple H about it, and Levesque gave him the answer that basically it's really hard to make money, to profit for running shows at the Hammerstein Ballroom. I'm assuming because of, well, the size of venue and also just maybe the outdated technology that's there for, you know, either broadcast and also just like
it's a commission state.
Maybe all of that too. So yeah, I just found it very interesting that we actually got a bit of news about why the WWE might not run these shows for Raw and SmackDown, thanks to Timothy Chalamet.
Well, I mean, first of all, it's great that Bob Dylan was able to get to the bottom of that. But I mean, that was a big reason. Like Madison Square Garden was just such a problematic venue to run. It's like, not that they're like losing money on these shows, but like it's the most expensive building in the world to book and to run. And you've got like union involvement that it's just, yeah, it's the biggest market in the country, but it's also like the expenses to run that venue are so significantly higher than a comparable size venue elsewhere that doesn't have the prestige of Madison Square Garden, but it is like that was, and there were years that WWE got away from running the Garden and instead just ran like the Barclays Center.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. All right. We are going to continue on the cafe side, going through your feedback and questions, and we will chat with you later on this week on YouTube. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.